every time I walk up to this stadium, I was the one player that was there at the groundbreaking. I dug the first hole in that stadium. I remember back in 15, our first game in this stadium against the Winter Play Blue Bombers. That was another milestone for me. And then I won my first Grey Cup in that same stadium. And I feel like it's destined. It was meant for me to end back up in this blue and gold.
Welcome back to another jam-packed edition of The Waggle. You know what? I'm just totally throwing out there that it's jam-packed. But you know what? It always is. Is it ever not Davis Sanchez?
If, I don't know. I don't even know if this week is jam-packed. I would probably say that if there was a week that it wasn't that jam-packed, it's this week. But then again, it seems like there's a lot going on. So how could I say it's not jam-packed? I'm pretty much clueless, James, in this this whirlwind of training camp and preseason games. You know why? Because the games don't mean a damn thing. So that's kind of why it's...
Unless you're fighting for a job.
Right.
Unless you're fighting for a job,
which is a lot of people's, which is why it's important that you see some moves made, which is there hasn't been a lot of moves made because teams don't have to cut their rosters down until right before the first game now. So there hasn't been a lot of roster moves, but there was some interesting things to see after a week of preseason, like there always is.
Yes, and it generally starts with the field general with a whole lot of volatility surrounding that position from coast to coast. He's Chez, I'm Balls, James Cebulski, and this is The Waggle. And as always, The Waggle brought to you by your friends and mine, Sport Clips, Sanchez.
Sport Clips is celebrating Father's Day. Can send you to watch you and your father to watch a game of your choice this season, plus customized jerseys for both you and your pops. Enter the contest by going to sportclips.ca fathers-day. That's sportclips.ca/fathers-day. So it's Father's Day, but it's fathers-day. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a holiday for Bay Area rappers. Like, remember the hyphy? Hyphy?
Yeah. Like, you going to hyphen day this weekend? Yeah, it's Father's hyphen day.
That was the same around the same time they were ghost riding the whips. Remember E-40, those guys ghost riding the whips where they would let the car roll and they would jump out and let the car roll down the street with no one in it? Yeah, I wasn't allowed to do that. You?
Is this around the same time that people were getting sprayed by these cars?
Yeah, I haven't heard any fatalities from Ghost Riding the Whip, but that was like a little phenomenon going on back like 10 years ago or something. But anyway, sportclips.ca/fathers-day. There we go. We got it.
There you go. Just think of the Bay Area.
Think of the Bay
hyphen
Area.
Day. speaking of the Bay Area, I want one thing I wanted to talk to you about because it's been front and center. If you're a sports fan, you've obviously been keeping close tabs on the NBA Finals, and J.R. Smith has been eating a lot of crow and a lot of humble pie for his gaffe in game one, not managing the shot clock, and everybody just absolutely put the boots to him on social media, the gifs and the memes of people just over the top. And it's, you know, don't get me wrong, I laugh and I shake my head at the same time watching that game. And in the same vein, I kind of sympathize. Did you ever experience like that, as a moment like that, whether as you as a player or a teammate or anything along those lines?
Not that I want to share on the air with everybody.
Yeah. You don't want any memes and gifs made about you?
What is this? The set up Davis to be an ass day? I mean, what's going on here, C-Ball?
We all make
mistakes. We all, you know, do things we wish we didn't do. And we all do it.
Yeah.
And we all, you know, we're all human and we all can... When someone fesses up to it and says, you know what, I just made a mistake. I was just dead wrong and I made it. We all can relate to that. So we're willing to give passes. But when you come out like he did after the game and said, no, I knew what the score was, when you can read his lips saying, I thought we were ahead, but he's saying that he knew the score. I mean, that's when everyone wants to rip him. But I had a situation, C-Ball, since you want to throw me out here like this. But I did have a pretty tough one, and it was a pretty big situation. It was in my high school, my senior year of high school in basketball, and we were playing in the provincial finals, and we were up by a point, and I got fouled, and go to the free throw line we were in the bonus, shooting one and one, and I said we were down by a point. We were down by a point. Not sure if I said that, mm-hmm. but we were down by a point. I get fouled and shooting one and one. I think it was 11 seconds left in the game. And I hit the first free throw, which was the big one because that's what tied the game up. And
you're tied.
I got a little excited and I gave a little Steph Curry shimmy. It wasn't Steph Curry back then, but I gave a little shoulder shimmy and a little high five to my buddy on the line. And you know, I was pretty confident. It felt like I was a clutch player. I knew I'd hit the free throws, but I was so excited. I front rimmed the second one so badly that it nicked the front rim and went underneath the hoop. So it basically was an air ball, the second one. So now we're tied. And they went down. This was for CFL fans. Chris Zarka was on that team, on the opposing team, which was Terry Fox Ravens at the time. And Brett Anderson also had a 10-year CFL career. So two CFL players, Brett Anderson and Chris Zarka, both on that opposing team. And they went down. Wow. They went down and scored to tie the. No, that's not right. The situation's not right. We were up by one. I hit the first one to put us up two. That's right. I hit the first one, make it put us up two. And then they went down and tied the game. They went down, scored a bucket, tied the game, went to overtime, and they won. And so the moral of the story is if I hit that free throw, we were up by two. If I hit that free throw, it would have put us up three and, you know, pretty much iced the game. Instead, I gave them a chance to come down. They tied the game, and we ended up losing. And when, you know, in high school, when you're that's a big deal for you. You play your whole life to win your high school championship when you're a senior. Anyway, that was it. So I was a bit of a goat.
Wait a minute. You're putting that on you that, okay, I get like you make it that much harder on a three-point game, but as a high schooler to make you get the one, so you still got your team up by two. Yeah. Like collectively, that's, you know, from a defensive standpoint, that's collectively more of a team thing as opposed to putting it on you. As the team didn't get a stop with 11 seconds to go as opposed to you know, blowing it at the free throw line. I don't know, man. Like, that's
– well, I understand
that you know what? I listen to that, and it sounds to me like you're simply being way too hard on yourself. Well,
when you barely front rim, when you almost airball it.
You went one and two. You didn't brick – it's not like you – I mean, you didn't brick both of them.
That's a fact. It is what it is. That was my closest moment, and it was because – the reason why it's a comparable is because – I got overexcited after the first one, and I let my emotions get the best of me, and I didn't hone in and settle down and breathe and make the second free throw like I knew I would have and should have. And that's the point of the story, is that I got the emotion of the moment. I got so excited that I didn't focus on what I was doing. I think that's what J.R. Smith did. And the memes, I don't care about. Hey, J.R. Smith's a big boy. He's made a lot of money. He's won NBA titles. He's going to be okay. But the memes were great. Yes. God, they were good. God, those were
so
good.
So, you know what I take away from that story, Chez, you were more George Hill than you were J.R. Smith.
That's a great point.
Is that fair?
That's fairly accurate. Okay. Yeah, yeah,
I'll give you that scenario,
those of you who watch the game would understand that.
So here we go. You know, the big story with respect to the Canadian Football League, you know, looking back on the first week of full preseason action, and that's Johnny Manziel making his unofficial CFL debut, his preseason debut with the Tabbies. You were there at Tim Hortons Field. You know, Chez, look, no matter what people say, whether you were on board the Johnny hype train or not, we'll dissect what you thought firsthand to watch what unfolded in his first game in the Canadian Football League. But look, ESPN was talking about it. A lot of the major websites, you know, in America and global sites, beyond just talking about it from a Canadian standpoint, had it up in their headlines over the course of the weekend on Friday night / Saturday morning. That was one of the big stories in sports. And that was putting the CFL on the map that nobody else would have garnered that sort of buzz in the league outside of him. And so this speaks to the star power that he's bringing to the Canadian Football League. I believe the reports early going that over 300,000, I think about 330,000 people were watching that preseason. We're talking preseason people for Johnny Manziel's debut with the Ticats. And now the plan is to broadcast the second Ticats preseason game that wasn't originally supposed to be. But you know what? Look, there's clearly value in what this guy is offering. So what about from an on-the-field standpoint? What did you take away from his performance in his debut?
Yeah, I thought so. He came in the game with about 3 or 4 minutes remaining in the second quarter. Originally, Jeremiah Masoli was not supposed to play that long. June Jones had said he just wanted to see, get a sample of from Jeremiah, and then he was going to move on to the next quarterbacks. But Masoli didn't have any success. He went eight possessions until he finally put a point on the board. So, as you know, the game, Toronto ended up beating them handily. But from a Johnny standpoint, when he came in the game, it was as expected. He kind of, June Jones had him quick three steps and out. He was going to his first read. He kind of seemed like he had predetermined where he was going. Three steps out, three-step hitches, things of that nature. And then you saw, I think it would have been his third series in, him start to get comfortable back there. And that's myself when I saw, you know, you were on the edge of your seat because he broke the pocket a few times, made some people miss. And what was impressive is he kept his eyes downfield. And he looked comfortable. And that's the best way for me to describe it, because there wasn't a lot that you're going to take from his performance, good or bad, and give an impression on what to expect from Johnny this year. That's I don't think anybody can do that. You can, but it's not going to be valid. But because vanilla defense and a small sample size. But what I did see and what is valid and what is real is that when he did drop back, he was comfortable back there. You could see he found like his athletic comfort. Like he was back there moving around, making people miss. His eyes were downfield. He's got enough arm strength. He threw one across his body that was an amazing throw, but it was an easy throw for him. And making people miss in the pocket back there and kind of he just looked comfortable. And that's the best way that I could explain it. I watched it from the sideline, from field level. And the one thing that me and the guys were watching it down there said was he looked comfortable. And, I've been kind of one of the guys. I've been one of the guys who thinks that he'll be a success. From what I've seen so far, I can't go any further on that, but I was impressed with what I saw from him in, I would call, his athletic comfort in pocket.
His demeanor that we saw on display that made him such a success story in the NCAA was evident with his performance in that game. And that's, like you said, he looked comfortable. There's a confidence to him, right? When he gets on the field and when it finally kind of popped for him, they played to his strengths. They played it safe. But you know what? He was accurate, and that helps build some confidence. But you kind of see that. And even listening to him after the game where, you know, obviously there was some trash talk going back and forth between he and the Argos. And as he basically said, like, I'm not going to take ish from anybody here, right? I'm here to compete. I'm here to play, and I'm here to earn a spot. And, you know, we continue to hear people that, you know, around the league that want to make their knocks and take their shots, and whether it's, you know, it's an envy thing or whether they're jealous, like, look, get with the times, people. Like, Johnny Manziel, whether you like him or not, is bringing eyeballs, and with eyeballs comes people with wallets and pocketbooks and credit cards and people that are going to spend money.
We know that. We've been through this. We understand that. But let's go to this. What did that mean to you? What did his comments after the game, when you heard that, what did you take from that?
I take it that the guy's a competitor, man. He wants to win. I'm not going to get punked. Like that's what I took away from it. That obviously somebody was talking stuff that he obviously felt. My sense is that somebody got personal. The fact that it came up, the fact that he responded the way he did, my sense is that somebody took it personal, or somebody got personal with him to try to get under his skin. And look, I mean, you can speak to this better than I can as a four-time All-Star in this league, but you know, guys talk, guys chirp, and there's playful smack talk, and Chez, I mean, you were one of those guys who like to talk, but at the same time, there's also an element that I'm sure you can probably say that there's an element where, you know, you can go personal, where some guys do and some guys won't cross that line. And it, my sense is that somebody probably crossed that line in his mind.
Yeah, I think you make a good point, because it was surprising as to in the presser, and I didn't hear it live. I was still out when he said that. I was still out on the field, and I didn't hear him say that live. I heard it on the way home, and I was surprised. And what I thought was, why are you saying that? Like, what's your yes? And I know you're a competitor, Johnny Manziel. I know it. We all know it. We've seen, you know, what you can do at 6 feet tall and, you know, being the best player in the world in college football. And that's at 6 feet tall. We know you're a competitor. But why are you saying that right now? And I think you make a good point. I think if it was somebody getting personal, and which I think that's where you're, you know, there's rules to the game, and the rules to the game in regards to respecting opponents and on the field, is there's certain things you just don't say. And the guys around the league who have respect and who are respected and are the OGs in the league, they know what you can say and what you can't say. And if you're a guy who continues to say nonsense, you'll get what's coming to you, and you'll you know, find your way out of the league. You're gonna do stuff like that. Cause that's really the only. There's no way to really monitor that stuff. So, you know, guys understand, because you're not gonna, if you're on a team and you're and a guy on your team is saying stuff like that, and you hear him even as a teammate, it gets around pretty quick. But I would, if someone says something like that, C-Ball, then yes, I think it makes sense. But to me, if they didn't, then that to me, and let's play the other side of it. There's a good chance he was just tripping and just got excited in the moment. And I also feel like this is part of it. I feel like, hey, look, he said all the right things. He's been saying all the right things, and that's great. But that being said, you know, eventually he's got to be who he is. Don't you agree that
yes,
the humble this humble now, Johnny Manziel,
he's been he's been saying all the right things because he's been in, you know what, a climate controlled condition,
right? And now he's out of that climate controlled condition after the game. The adrenaline's pumping,
emotion,
yeah. And now all of a sudden he says this, which you know, to me it kind of raised eyebrows. And I expect, you know, if he asked me for my advice, which I'm sure one day he will. Wink, wink, nod, nod. I mean, you have to be
so humble.
You,
so humble.
You have to be yourself. I mean, you cannot go through this. He's not going to be successful. And I mark my words, take the date down today, write it down, pencil it on your arm. I don't care. Tattoo it on your butt, whatever. But he's not going to be successful in the league if he's not himself. So he's going to come out of the shell that we're seeing right now. Eventually, he's going to come out of that shell. So as long as he's a good dude in the community, as long as he respects the league, respects the people that came before him and the people who come after him, he respects the community he plays in and the great fans of the league, he could be himself. He could talk as much as he wants. He could be as much Johnny Football as he wants, because that's the only way that he's going to get back to being who he is on the field. And I think he's doing the right thing by not, not doing that until he's actually balling. Because you can't do that when you're not putting up numbers. But eventually, once he starts putting up numbers, you saw it, perfect example, one press conference, one game, and he's already calling out the Argos. And not only, C-Ball, did he call out the guys, but he also let them know, hey, by the way, I like it. We'll see you guys again. I look forward to seeing you guys again the regular season. He said that. And what I don't think Johnny might know is that he wasn't – those guys that he saw on last weekend – those won't be the same guys he sees in a couple weeks when he sees the Argos in the regular season or in the mid-season when they get together. Because it's going to be Cleon Lang. It's going to be Bear Woods. It's going to be Marcus Ball, Cassius Vaughn, Johnny Sears Jr. That's who he's going to see when he lines up against the Argos. Not the guy. The guys he saw on Thursday night or Friday night in Hamilton, those guys will be back at their universities working to finish up their degree, most of them. So just so he knows, that's not who he's going to be seeing. So – little heads up, little FYI for you, Johnny. The guys that you're talking trash to right now on the field, those guys probably won't be there. Most of them won't be there because the Argos didn't bring any of their guys.
No, that's probably the bigger concern for Hamilton, that it was it's not necessarily it wasn't exactly an all-star, or it wasn't exactly a team that completely resembled the Grey Cup champions, the defending Grey Cup champions from 6 months ago. And here's another thing. And again, the coaching staff and everybody with the tabby saying all the right things, but and yes, it's only preseason, but Jeremiah Masoli with not one but two interceptions in that game. I just wonder if that guy's starting to feel the heat. And how do you not, from a human nature standpoint? Everybody might be telling you you're the guy, and I know that teammates like the guy a lot, they respect him immensely, and all of it. But in the same vein, when you look at here's a guy that who's making all the noise? Who's everybody want to talk to? Nobody wants to talk to the starting quarterback in Hamilton right now. Everybody wants to talk to the backup, right? The hype machine is all with the backup quarterback right now. How do you not feel that, right? I would think that's just human nature. I mean, I think if I were to put myself in that situation, you can be as mentally tough as it comes, but I would still think that there would be a little bit of envy, a little bit of a concern, a little bit of footsteps. I mean, I work in a business where there's a ton of insecurity to begin with, so I can only imagine when you got somebody who you brought in here. The coach has already gone on record saying, I think he could be the greatest player to ever play in the league. How do you not kind of sleep with one eye open, so to speak, gripping your pillow tight, to steal a line from Metallica?
Jeremiah, you're right. I mean, I agree with you. I think his temperament is perfect, but I mean, there's no doubt. I think he knows this. Jeremiah understands that he as long as Johnny Manziel and him are on the same team, he's gonna have that deal with. Just I think it just is what it is. And I think he's probably come to grips with that. So for Jeremiah, I think he has to be more concerned with not what Johnny's doing or what he's not doing, or what the fans are asking for or talking about, but more just the straight X's nose and what he's doing on the football field. And that's, I mean, June Jones has said it time and time again. And he even said that Jeremiah has had one of the best camps I've seen of a quarterback. Now that's praise. So, and I don't think, a couple snaps or, five, six series in a preseason game, one game won't change June Jones's mind. But what it will do is it will have him second guessing or looking at it at least. So now this game, if Jeremiah is going to play, which I'm not sure he will, maybe because of what happened last week, he might play in Montreal. But what it will do is it will have him. It's important that the next time he plays, he's got to perform better. Because now I would equate it to baseball. That's a strike. You know what I mean? Like that wasn't. It's okay to have a game like that when you've had the body of work you've had. Through the second half of last season, and then again in the preseason, how good he's been. But that's a strike. That performance is a strike.
Yeah, and you know what? They've got another game, and it's going to be nationally televised, another preseason game, and that's the Manziel effect for the Hamilton Ticats. And again, it's a horrible start to the season for the Hamilton Ticats. I mean, to open up on the road against both Calgary and Edmonton before you come back home and you've got to tangle with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. You're not a, well, listen, if the Tabbies are as legit as we all thought that they were in the second half of 2017, then you know what? Then bring it on. But for a team that not a lot of people are still looking at as being a legitimate Grey Cup threat, where you can look in the province of Alberta, both those teams are legitimate Grey Cup home run threats. And the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, when you look at what that team was last year, and they added an essential all-star caliber receiver in Adarius Bowman, and an all-star caliber linebacker, Adam Big Hill, who's recently returned from the National Football League. That's a real, real tough ask for the Ticats to have success early. And I wonder if, and I've gone on record, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Chez. I am not surprised. And I'm thinking that Johnny Manziel will be starting quarterback probably week three, week four of the CFL season, just based on the way the schedule is set up for Hamilton. Because let's face it, June Jones is there to win. And he wants to win too, and I'm sure he's going to feel that pressure too. You know, you're trying to sell tickets, you're trying to sell hope, and just think of what the fan base is going to say in Hamilton once that team, if they're 0-2. You come back, you haven't played a home game yet, and all of a sudden you're 0-2. Well, you lost to Calgary, you lost to Edmonton. There's no shame to losing to the Stamps, and there's no shame to lose to Edmonton, especially on the road, but sell that to a fan base that's, you know, been waiting almost 20 years for a Grey Cup championship.
I have a sneaky suspicion that this season is going to play out a lot like it did last year, with the narrative that the East is a subpar division. And I'll tell you a couple reasons why. One is just what you're saying, how difficult Hamilton's opening schedule, their schedule is to start off with. That's not going to be easy. I think, what is it, 5 or 6 against the West on? 5 or 6 against the West, I believe Hamilton has. But if you look at Toronto's, no one's talking about that. Look at Toronto's schedule. This is the Grey Cup champion. Now, the National Football League does it. It's where if the best team has the toughest schedule the next year. Well, looks like the CFL might have adopted some of that. We know that's not the way it works, but it seems like it. The Toronto Argonauts, I believe, is it 8? It's either 7 or 8. The first 7 or 8 games of the season, and you might have it in front of you, first 7 or 8 games of the season are against it's West awful. Opponents. West, West, yeah. West, 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 West. That's the Argos. It's not like 5 out of 7 or 4 out of 7. It's 7 of 7.
You want me to share it? You want me to read it?
Fire them out.
You want me to read it?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. They open up the season on the road in Saskatchewan. Then they're home against Calgary. Then it's home and away against Edmonton twice, back-to-back weeks. Then it's home and away against Winnipeg, back-to-back weeks. So there's your first 6 games before the first weekend of August. They've got Ottawa at home. Wow. Then it's BC at home, and then Montreal. So they don't get a chance to catch their breath probably until August. Before that's when they start going in division. But the first 6 weeks, it's Saskatchewan, Calgary, Edmonton, Edmonton, Winnipeg, Winnipeg for Toronto. So, I mean, that's equally brutal.
Right.
But the Tabbies, I mean, you know, they it's the same thing for them. The first 5 weeks, it's all against the West. On the road against Calgary, on the road against Edmonton, home to Winnipeg, and then home and away with Saskatchewan. They start on the road. So 3 of their first 4 games on the road against West Division teams before they come back home to Sasky, and then they get their first Eastern game at the end of July against the Red Blacks. So, again, that's brutal. Now, Toronto, I feel a little more, you know, there's a little more stability there based on what you saw from them in the second half of the season, or at least what I saw, and knowing what you got in both Ricky Ray and James Franklin, where if the going gets tough, I'm not surprised. How do you not get trigger happy, I think, if you're June Jones and say after 2-0-2, you know, the schedule almost kind of plays itself out to push towards Manziel starting sooner rather than later. And that's where I see, you know, that's where it'll likely happen. Especially if Manziel shows some success this weekend, right? Because he's going to play. You know, he's going to get some significant playing time this weekend along with Masoli, as most starters should in theory. I know that talking to Wally Buono earlier this week, you know, he's anticipating Jonathan Jennings and a lot of the starters on both sides of the football to probably play north of a half. Like, he's talking about two and a half quarters for his starters to be ready to go for the regular season.
Well, that's a team too that has, I mean, defensively, you're going to see 6-7 new starters on defense. Offensively, not as many, but you got a little bit of shift around the offensive line. JJ coming up new.
Well, they're talking about almost 13 starters in BC, right?
There you go. Yeah. So that the different teams have different ideas on how they'll do things. Yeah. Toronto is set with a lot of the same roster they had last year. So they chose to not play their starters last game, and from what I'm hearing, they're not going to play their starters again this week. I don't think Ricky or SJ and a lot of the vets won't play again this week. So that's a complete different theory where they're not playing. And Mark Trestman, his thought process as he goes through it is, hey, I'd rather – my guys are ready, they're prepared, we've worked hard, and I'd rather have my guys fresh going into week 1 than they don't have to prove anything to me in a preseason game. So that's his process going into it. And you know, everyone has a different thought. On another note, speaking about Toronto Argos, I do need to mention that I am James. You can add to 3-time Grey Cup champ, 1-time Toronto Argonauts Alumni Association golf tournament champion. I was crowned that with my team. One, Damon Allen, Jim Pop, general manager Jim Pop, and then of course Matt from Football Ops. The four of us crowned champions of the Toronto Argonauts Alumni Golf Tournament yesterday, 2 days ago. It's quite the honor. I'd like to thank my family and my friends and everyone else that was a part of that to allow me to bring home this championship to the city of Toronto. I stink. By the way, Jim Pop can play some golf.
Are you talking about, is it? Okay.
I'm terrible. You know. Jim Pop can play some golf. Damon Allen can play some darn golf. And our guy Matt can play golf. I'm terrible. I did hit an eagle. I did make an eagle putt. On 16 to get us a stroke up, which was a pretty big lucky putt by me. But my team definitely carried me.
We're not talking about. Is it Matt? Matt Houston, one of the scout on the roster.
You know what, Matt? Matt is a student at Western who's interning with the Argos in the. Football ops department. I don't know Matt's last name, but I know he works with the Western football squad, and now he's interning in football ops with the scouting department there. He can hit the golf ball, I'll tell you that much. And he listens to the Waggle, so shout out to Matt. Shout out to Matt, who is a good young dude who's got a bright future in football and can strike it. But
You can tell where he ranks on the pecking order in Davis Sanchez's foursome. You know, we've got a future Hall of Famer in all likelihood, Jim Pop, with what he did for all these years as a manager. Obviously, Damon Allen, legendary figure in the Canadian Football League. Davis Sanchez, who in my mind should be a future Hall of Famer, possibly down the road as well, based on all of his credentials, and Matt.
I just met Matt the other day. I don't remember his name.
He's like
Matt.
Cher. He's like Madonna.
Maybe that's it.
He's just one name, you know?
I just met the young man.
Like Bono.
I'll tell you what, he had enough of
Slash.
He made enough of an impression. Matt. He made enough of an impression on me that I remembered his name. I promise you that. How about that? Hey? Hey?
Well, you won the tournament. You won the tournament, so I'll give you that.
Hey, what's going on with Montreal? Josh Freeman is is gone. Chip Cox is just been announced that he's coming back to Montreal. That he's that was a strange deal with Chip there. He missed the week at camp, but he has decided to return. And looks like if he's returning at this time, if camp, it looks like that would let me know that he's assured of a job this season. Which he's this kid's. You want to talk about Hall of Famers? He's getting in. So if you want to throw my name in there, I got to wait for him because he's definitely going in. That's a Hall of Fame player right there and kind of, I think, underappreciated Montreal. But good to see him back. And if he can throw the ball, that would be helpful as well because I think we're still looking for the man under center. Thoughts on this, on the Josh Freeman release, C-Ball?
I shake my head on it because, the Owls tried to roll this guy out and Josh Freeman, this is a big splash that we brought in here. This is going to be our guy. They rolled him out. They obviously showed him off to the community. They hyped him up from a media standpoint. And did he even last a week?
I don't think they hyped him up.
Kind of sad.
I don't think they hyped him up any different than anybody else. What did they do? What did they do to hype him up? They brought him out.
Tell me this. Did Drew Willey have the fanfare when they brought him to Montreal?
I think Drew Willey came in the middle of the season and was a backup to Darian Durant. So Josh came. To be fair, Josh was signed in the offseason when they didn't have a quarterback. And we're looking to find somebody. So if people like us who wanted to talk to him because he was possibly going to be a starter and he has NFL pedigree, did you reach out to him and want to talk to him on the Waggle?
I certainly did.
We did speak to him.
That was our choice. And we listened to him and liked what he had to say and seemed to be excited about. I just don't. And obviously, I think the fact that he's done. I think based on everything I heard, it sure sounded like his heart wasn't really into it. Like, I think it was, I'll give it a try, but, you know, really was his heart really into it? I think based on everything that the reports and what's been suggested and what's been said and just the way that people observed him, I don't know if his heart was really into it. But now you kind of look at what now? And it right now it looks like Drew Willey's their guy. Now, Drew Willey, it didn't work. He had the keys to the kingdom in Winnipeg, and it didn't work there. And look where this team's at now with Matt Nichols at the helm. And, you know, the Argos made one of the they made a massive trade, and it's remarkable how this team's rebounded so quickly after giving up so much to give up a guy that good, or to give up to get a guy like that. And they threw him in there at the end of 2016 and sent quickly on his way last year, and he resurfaces in Montreal. But I mean, I guess for the now, he's the quarterback, and maybe this is an opportunity for him to find some confidence again. And but this is a hard way to sell tickets in Montreal, and it's a hard way to sell hope for a guy that really hasn't been the answer. In two previous organizations.
Well, he'll get a shot.
Consecutive years.
Well, he'll get a shot. That's really, and he has weapons. He's got. Seems like his O line will be better. He's got weapons outside. So at the end of the day, he'll get a shot, and that's we can. You know what? I think we've beat this to death. Of oh no, who's going to play quarterback? And oh no, the Owls are in trouble because I agree that without a quarterback, you are in trouble. But let's see what happens now. That's it. Let's see what happens. They're gonna line up in 2 weeks from now. I'll be out there on Saturday for this. They have a game Saturday I think I'll be there. But they're playing the Hamilton for this, for their second preseason game. But let's see what happens in 2.5 weeks from now when they kick off for real, and let's see if Drew Willey can get it done. That's at the end of the day. The good thing is about this C-ball is that no one expects anything from this offense and from Drew. The expectations aren't high, and he has he's talented. So he has a repertoire of talent, and he has a good skill set. So, and expectations are low. So for him, hey Drew, go out and slang that thing around the park and do what you do. And that's really at the end of the day, that's where we're at.
Well, and you know what? They open up on the road against BC here in Vancouver, and the Lions. When you look at where that team is. There's a team that's going through a lot of personnel change, and this might be a team based on their defensive struggles last year. It may not, like, when compared to having to go against, I don't know, say Calgary or Toronto right away or wherever it may be, BC might not be that bad of a scenario to open up on the road to start your season against, just based on how things ended for the Lions last year. So that's where things sit for the Montreal Alouettes. But it looks like Drew Willey's going to get the keys to the kingdom. But that's not the only place with volatility right now in the Canadian Football League when it comes to the quarterback position. And that brings us to, well, the Ottawa Redblacks. And Trevor Harris gets hurt in Ottawa's first preseason game against Montreal. Now, the sense is that everybody's saying the right thing, that he's going to be ready to go for week one of the CFL season in a week or so here, Chez. But, you know, this is not a scenario that it's Henry Burris and Trevor Harris anymore. It's a far cry from that because, you know, all of a sudden you're quickly scrambling. I mean, I don't know about you, but I was quickly all of a sudden looking on my depth charts going, wait a minute, who are the HE double hockey sticks is backing up Trevor Harris this year?
I don't know. Tell me. I don't even know. Let me know. Tell me.
Yeah,
who
So Danny Collins gets some playing time, and Dominique Davis. Danny Collins, who's 24-year-old out of Maine, and then you got Dominique Davis, who we last saw hanging out with the Winnipeg Blue Bomber. Yeah, who is, I think, what every Winnipeg Blue Bomber fan was feeling after his sort of experience last season. And that kind of spoke about the lack of depth they had when Matt Nichols kind of got nicked up late in the season last year. But, you know, you got Danny Collins, who put up some respectable numbers, about 185 yards against Montreal last week. But This, to me, speaks about some of the depth that's going on around the CFL at the quarterback position. We're seeing it happening with Montreal. Drew Willey's now once again going to be get every opportunity to probably be the guy again. And then conversely, if Trevor Harris is going to miss any significant time, it suddenly brought some credence to the report that came out of Regina earlier this week from Rod Peterson, who suggested that teams have been kicking tires or asking Chris Jones about the availability of some of his quarterbacks based on the stable that they have in one Zach Collaros and Brandon Bridge. But I can't imagine them wanting to make a move on that. Why would you, especially with the health and kind of the history you've seen the last couple of years with Zach Collaros? There's talent there and there's a great ceiling if things click, but you know, with the uncertainty of what happened in the last couple of years from a health standpoint and from just the way he played,
nobody.
Why would you even think about moving Brandon Bridge right now or Collaros for that matter, right?
And Jonesy said that. He said that was his exact quote, is he's not doing anything. And the only in this league, and I don't even think this league, in pro football, the only time that you'll move your backup quarterback is if your third string guy is pushing him or is that good. If your third string guy is that good, then you'll move it. I don't care if you offer me the world, my backup quarterback, I'm probably not going to take it. If I have a good team, a team that can win, and I don't have a number three that I feel good about, I'm not trading my backup quarterback for nothing. You might as well. I'll trade my backup about as quickly as I'll trade my starting quarterback. Because you know you're one play away, and if you don't have a quarterback, your season's over. So even if a team gives you the world, you might as well give away your – if you give away your back or quarterback and your starter gets hurt, you might as well give up the world anyway because you're done. So Jonesy said that, and that's – I mean, it's reality. Unless you have three that are good, I don't think anyone's giving away their backup.
Well, and now all of a sudden you start looking at what the Lions have kind of added in terms of depth at the quarterback position. And last weekend, you talk about backups. You're waiting for the health of Travis Lule to come back and to see if he's going to ultimately be the number two this year in BC. But, you know, the Lions also brought in Cody Fajardo, who was last year backing up in Toronto and became expendable with the acquisition of James Franklin behind Ricky Ray. But the guy that everybody was talking about here on the West Coast was Ricky Lloyd. And Ricky Lloyd comes in, goes 15-23 in the second half against the Calgary Stampeders in Calgary, throws three touchdown passes, Chez, 121 yards passing, and leads the Lions to an impressive win over Calgary. Again, it's preseason, but there were people that were all of a sudden going, wow, you know, when you look at the history of Wally Buono and quarterback play over the years, Jeff Garcia, Dave Dickinson, Travis Lule, for that matter, Mike Riley, Buck Pierce, and boy, oh boy, here suddenly you're looking at, I guess Jonathan Jennings, is he in that discussion? We'll see what sort of, you know, market correction or what happens in 2018. But Ricky Lloyd all of a sudden had people starting to think, you know, is this the next in line? Again, it's one preseason game, but it sure had people buzzing. Based on a three touchdown performance in preseason.
Yeah, you know, he did. It's like you said, it's preseason, so you take it for what it is. But it was
quarterback depth, right?
Yeah.
It's quarterback
no doubt.
Depth.
Yeah, it's important. You said it. It's extremely important, and it's and for the BC Lions, you look at their quarterback situation and Cody Fajardo. I think this is more of a conversation, and it goes to what you said about having three guys, but. Cody Fajardo is a guy who came over. Cody Fajardo was in Toronto, and he had the upper hand on not only on Ricky Lloyd, but on Jonathan Jennings and Travis Lule because he comes from that system. So Jarius Jackson's system comes from Art Trespin and Scott Milanovic, and that's where Jarius' system comes from. And Cody Fajardo was in that system. So Travis Lule talked about just how much further ahead Cody Fajardo was than the rest of the guys, but it looks like the finals around the curve on a 4x100 looks like Cody Fajardo or Ricky Lloyd has made up some of that on the turn there because Cody Fajardo had a big lead on those guys, and I think after seeing what you saw out of Ricky Lloyd, and remember he played as well, so Cody played as well. So, I mean, he had 38 yards, 3-4, 38 yards. It's yeah. You're right. It's a good problem to have, and it looks like, you know, at least Ricky Lloyd is the guy that be in the conversation.
So as we wind things down, preseason matchups to close out the exhibition sched, it's Ottawa and Toronto on Thursday, along with Calgary, Saskatchewan Friday, with the doubleheader Winnipeg at BC Place Stadium to take on the Lions. Then you got Hamilton, Montreal on the Saturday. What happens with Masoli here in week number two, after two picks in week one? Like you said, I think you summed it up very well. It's a strike. I also really want to see what Zach Caleros can do and get some playing time in Saskatchewan this week. You know, he didn't play in the opening game, but does he get a little playing time? And does Brandon Bridge see some time of substance as well here? Hey, listen, we should give a quick shout out to the CFL as they announced their Thursday Night Football concert series over the course of the year. Some pretty good acts, music acts that are going to be playing all summer long from June right up until mid-August. But bands like the Rec Laws, Tim Hicks is playing, and Cardi Official, who I know that you go back number of years with Cardi, Jazz Cartier, Chad Brownlee, but lots of great names and acts that are going to be coming to towns near you that get going week one, June 14th in Winnipeg, and rolling all the way through until August 9th at BC Place Stadium. That's Davis Sanchez. I'm James Cebulski. We got a great guest coming your way, especially if you're a Bombers fan. You're going to want to hear this. And you know what? Even if you're an Edmonton fan, you're going to want to hear this too. Chez Adarius Bowman. Now with the and I'll tell you what, you talk about a guy who's looking at a clean sheet or a clean field, freshly cut grass, whatever you want to look at it. He's excited, he's ready to go, and that conversation is coming up right here on The Way. And joining us this week on The Waggle, one of the new faces in Winnipeg, Adarius Bowman, who went for so many years in green and gold. He's in blue again. And how you feeling about this? Are you used to the colors?
Oh, I definitely am. And I'm back in my original number, back in my 12, so I feel good about that. But, man, definitely excited to be back in the city, man.
What are you most excited about?
Number one, like I say, going into my 11th year now in the CFL, it's more of a closure, you know what I mean? Closure in the sense of I've been here before. I remember last time I was here in Winnipeg, same AD, but I've made a couple of tweaks since then. You know, I was a younger guy, didn't really know how to, like, truly appreciate and value the whole process of being a pro, you know? So I feel like I made some poor decisions when I was here in this city. But the one thing that always sticks to me is every time I walk up to this stadium, I was the one player that was there at the groundbreaking. I dug the first hole in that stadium before that stadium was even there. And I did that in 2010. I remember back in 15, our first game in this stadium against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. That was another milestone for me. And then I won my first Grey Cup in that same stadium too. So, like, that's what I was saying, like, closure. It's like life bringing it back around. So, man, I feel like it's destined. It was meant for me to end back up in this blue and gold.
Wow, I did not realize that. I do remember the 12, though. I remember the 12. You're back.
Yeah,
12,
yeah.
Huh?
Back, big 12. Back in it, baby. Back in it. TJ Hill was the reason I couldn't get it in Edmonton, man. I was like, his agreement for it was like it was over my head at the time. So I said, you got it, bro.
TJ Hill is a big shooter. That's right. That's right. Hey, tell me this, AD, as you're a vet now and you're, you know, you're in a new city. How do you transform your game a little bit? I mean, I know, you know, the obvious things, you know, working out and taking care of your body, but other than that, you know, X and O's wise, route running wise, how do you transform your game as you come into 18?
Hey, you're so much right. Number one thing, you got to be on social media. You got to keep up with social media because these young boys getting advanced around here. So you got to get advanced with the new things they doing, man. But outside of that, man, definitely, I'm a film junkie. See, I'm always watching film, man, and you probably can see it too. The game's getting a lot faster every year. A lot more faster. Players are getting a lot more bigger. I think I don't know if it's the players, but the ones mentoring and coaching and their role models are giving them a lot more access to things. Like I use the social media joke, but it's a lot more access to things. Like
no
every
doubt
athlete,
about
you see what I mean. Every athlete can almost get it. So I'm not going to leave myself out that loop. So I always take a couple pieces of that stuff. I always have my guy Kenny Stafford, D-Walk. I always hit me up on anything they know. And I just kind of incorporated with the old school. I'm a true OG now. We was the original football players, man. You know, we don't even get passed this year. You know what I mean? So just trying to keep up with the X and O's. Like I said, these guys are getting a lot more advanced. So start from there, then I'm always adding it to my game. So I just keep up with the young guys.
Who you been head slapping and going at it with in camp now? Is it you're going at it with Randall, or who you banging with all the time?
I was just gonna say C-Ran, every time any kind of motion come down to that boundary, I love seeing his face. Man, outside of that, you know who I've been enjoying going up against this year? Fenner. Chandler Fenner over there from got him over there from BC. I was seeing him a couple of times in BC, but you know, once you get a guy in practice, you can kind of see their true character and how they really work. I've enjoyed going up against him. And then, you know who else been getting in the mix?
Anthony Gator.
Gator's an animal. Gator's an animal. I like that guy. Love him. I love him. So, honestly, man, it's been competition all across the secondary. I like seeing all them guys. The work level over here is way – I didn't expect things to be easier, but they moving at a great pace over here. I like it. And you know, on some teams, you got to use your leaders to get everybody motivated. Man, we got a great combination of, like, veterans around here to where, like, it's just the norm to fly to the ball. It's just the norm to go hard at each other every day. You know, I see – Darvin Adams and C-Ran, they see each other a lot more. And I'm talking about, they talking bad to each other in practice. I'm like, man, you know what I mean? But that's what we do every day. So I've been enjoying seeing all the DBs. But like I told you, I'm enjoying playing with Big Hill, man. I didn't understand how involved that guy liked to be. You know, he got a little trash talk on him. So that's been nice, too.
I love the energy and to hear this new lease on life for you going back to Winnipeg. And I think if you're a Bombers fan listening right now, you got to be excited about this acquisition. And I know when we were in Winnipeg a few months ago, a lot of people buzzing about, you know, you landing there to kind of give that offense kind of a big play target that I think Matt Nichols has been missing for the last couple of years. But tell me this. Where did it go sideways for you last year? What happened? Because you were kind of the guy when it comes to playmakers in the CFL in 2016. You know, 120 grabs and then what? Just 45 last year. I know there were some injuries, but what happened in your
life? Yeah. In my mind, I'm just trying to be as honest as I possibly can. Didn't much happen with Adarius in terms of change who I am. I think just change happened within just the game, you know, the system. You know, in that city I was in, a bunch of changes that happened, if it's from coaches to GMs or whatever it is. So that was the biggest thing I would say. And then after that, that's adapting to change. Maybe I didn't fit in the change, you know what I mean? But it's definitely something I'm still learning and growing from today, you know what I mean? I won't say I was confused about it. You know, I've been around a long time, you can see it, but it was just change, you know? So for me, just adapting to it, and I had to. I wasn't going to change myself, but it was a rough one, but we made it out, you know?
And you were like, I mean, when you get that first decision that, you know, the organization's going to go in a different direction, you know, never mind being a player and just, you know, having your teammates that you're going to say goodbye to, but you were so involved in that community and there was a real special relationship you had with a family there in terms of what you were doing to help your teammates. You know, there were some great stories that, you know, how hard was that to kind of say goodbye initially?
Honestly, that was the hard part. The business side of it, the football part, totally makes sense. You can see those things happening. That's a part of the business. That's part of the process. But that part right there, you just said, the neighbors, the friends, the kids I got involved with. You know, it's some kids, man, I don't see these kids for 7 years now, you know, so I don't even get attached to each other. Some of my neighbors, you know, that they done had grandkids and lost, you know, lost in families, you know, attending funerals. Like, Edmonton's home, you know what I mean? Me and my family will be back there after the season. But, like, that was the toughest part, you know, leaving a foundation you started building. But, yeah, in terms of the business, it was smoother, but that was, I agree, the relationship that I built in that community. And they gave it back to me, too. Edmonton's amazing. I have nothing negative to say about that place.
Yeah, plug your foundation. You do a lot of great things with autism. Adarius for Autism, what is it, AD? Tell us where to find you and what it is.
Darius for Autism. We up and going, and it's actually a area where we're trying to help the transition for these kids after grade school. So after grade 12, you know, my little bit of knowledge I've been getting from these parents, You know, that's their worry. You know, after their kids done with grade school, what are they going to do? You know, there's no colleges kind of specialized for autistic kids. They have challenges keeping jobs, you know. And so I've just been trying to build an environment to where they can continue to work on their skills and crafts, and we turn that into a work environment. So just almost, like I say, building their own community. Because, like I say, I remember the day I graduated college, you know what I mean? It's in my mom's face. I remember, you know, the day I, you know, made All-Star for the first time as a pro. You know, so I look at it as these kids should have those same type of opportunities, and they should get these same accomplishments and goals in life, and it should be shined on, and people should hear about it too, because these kids are awesome. Not just kids, but they turn into adults, you know what I mean? These parents are worried about where my kid's going to work, where is he always going to be living with me, just trying to, like I said, continue to work on their skills and build their own community. That's what it's really all about.
Darius, personally, we've talked about it, I've mentioned to you before, but I want to thank you for what you're doing. It's great. I have a grown sister who has autism, and so I understand completely what you're talking about. She's 25 years old, and it's a difficult adjustment for them because she has a great job, and she's in a situation where it's all about routine, but there's a small place for them to find their kind of their niche and their comfortability, and they found that the program for her back in BC, but what you're doing is awesome as well. But back to football. I wanted to know, you played with two pretty good quarterbacks here in the last few years in Mike Riley and Edmonton, and of course Matt out there.
Oh yeah.
For receivers, people don't realize that it's a lot about, you know, the ball they throw and kind of, you know, your adjustment to that. Give me a little bit of a difference between Mike and Matt and being a receiver on the other end of either those two guys. What's the difference you've been, you know, catching Matt's ball to catching Mike's ball?
Oh man, number one difference. First, both of those guys are animals. You know what I mean? Me and Mike have did some great things. Me and Matty was already building that before, you know, he had his career, but he's kind of got the blossom here. I always told people that's one position I never want parts of. I'm glad, you know, as a receiver, there's five other spots you can get. As a quarterback, it's only one at a time. You know what I mean? So Mike is my guy. Mike have a bit more stronger arm. He's a warrior. You know what I mean? He gets it done. He's going to move around that pocket. But definitely what I've seen in Matty, well, I was seeing him do it the past 2 years, but now that I'm here with him, I kind of got reminded of it. But it's his pocket presence, his timing, his perfection for the game. You know, being in the right place at the right time is big with Matty. And he's going to get that ball out to you at the perfect time. He's going to locate it where you need it. You know, he's kind of processing a lot of stuff. And to see him over here, like, that voice and that leader, I'm learning a new Matty, you know what I mean? So I'm seeing more and more every day. But the biggest thing I would say is Matty's more of that. He's going to rely on his playbook and sit in that pocket, you know. But you know, not knocking neither of them. Mike's just a warrior, man. I think y'all know what I mean. Like, he just gets the job done, you know. But definitely both great guys. I can't say that I would be more successful than Mike.
They're both pretty good.
I like it. Like, they both pretty good, man. Yeah, yeah.
Well, how do you guys now, and James, me and James have talked about this on the show, and we've had, you know, other analysts come on the show and talk about it.
Yeah.
It's the same old conversation when it comes to Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and that's, they don't have enough big plays down the field. They're not a big play team, and that's why when we talk about, you know, the better teams in the West, the best teams in the league, a lot of times Winnipeg gets left out, and it's a lot of times it's because of that. Now, I think if you look at BC, what they did down the field, you know, 2 years ago, and then, of course, you know about Calgary and Edmonton. But
what is it
now, when you look at your core, tell me why your core now can be considered, and what you've seen from your core to be considered with Lapo's offense, you guys will be considered, you know, a team that has enough big play capability to compete with the other explosive offenses in the league. We know about the run game and all that, no lie.
Oh, yeah.
What about the explosive offense, the big play?
Oh, yeah. First off, leading this pack right here, D, I will have to give that credit to Lapo. Oh, man, it's nice to be back with Lapo. He's a lot more advanced this time. But after that, man, in our core, you got Darvin Adams, just a guy I've been a fan of for years, you know what I mean, been checking him out. But now to be with him and to see this guy's work ethic and practice, like I say, you know what I mean, it just makes you gain a lot more respect for a player. I'm back with Weston Dressler. He's one of the most consistent receivers that's been in this league. We came in together. another young guy that I think we call him the X Factor. You know what I mean? Nick Dembski. You know what I mean? You know when they come from the CFL, you got to have a good balance of American and Canadian. Yeah, I don't care who you are. You know what I mean? You got to find a way to balance that if you want to be successful in this league. And I think that's an amazing balance. And then you said don't speak a lot on it, but it's hard to not speak of our running game when our running game end up having the same amount of catches as our receivers.
Don't speak on it, AD. This is my show. This is my show. I said don't speak on it.
So it's amazing to see that guy in action, man. But just not to give too much out, man, and not to be, you know, I'm going to stay humble about the situation, but the work ethic that I see in these guys and to be around it, it's kind of scary at times, man. It's kind of scary, but I see I knew we're one of the most experienced and smart group of receivers I've ever been around. Like I say, just that big three right there, Darvin, Weston Dressler, and myself, you know what I mean, just to start it off, it don't get no better than that. And the Ricky,
let's
we got it right
OGs,
here.
Dude, let's see what the OGs do. That's a lot of OG in that three. Yeah. Let's see what those old guys. I'm pulling for the old guys.
You hear me? Let's do it, D. You know how it goes. So, man, I'm just enjoying that process. But it's very humbling. Like I say, it's a lot more like upgrading and advancing rather than so much teaching. I know you know what I mean, D. Sometimes it'll be me, and then I'm working with like two other guys that, you know what I mean? I remember even when I first was with D. Walk that year, it took him a couple of games. You know, he was balling, but I'm saying that his knowledge and understanding of the CFL game, you know what I mean? It was a lot of work we had to do, which I'll do it all over again, you know. But this one is kind of just like the communication and the pace we can go on day one is because of those years of experience we got out here in this course. So, man, like I say, I'm just ready, man.
No doubt.
Darius, how do you build chemistry so quickly? I mean, you had a pretty good debut in the first preseason game where you had two quick grabs and, you know, an average of what, 23 yards per catch based on the numbers at the end of the day and a touchdown with that.
Yeah.
But how do you build chemistry quickly to start this season, and particularly with Matty Nichols?
Oh, man, I used to have another way of probably answering that question, but I think I got to change it. Character. Not characters, but a lot of character. I think that helps the speed of it so fast. You know what I mean? You got character, and then like I say, those years of experience. You know what I mean? Those years of experience make it a little bit more simple. You know, like offensive coordinator, they're using different terminology. We still playing football, so the concepts are pretty much the same, but it's just different words. But to know you with a guy that y'all was playing together in SAS, and he could throw an old word to you to kind of remind you why you're in that waggle. It just helps you. It just helps the whole process. You know what I mean? You with guys, once you break the huddle, they communicate back and forth. Hey, this is what we got on this side. This is your split. This is what I got. What do you got? What, you know, that helps all that. And then, like I say, I'm still learning this new Matt Nichols I'm telling you about. Like I say, the leadership he's showing, it makes it even that much too when your quarterback's so locked in and knows his whole playbook inside and out. It just makes it easy, man.
Hey, just in closing, listen, appreciate you doing this, but as a guy who, you know, spent some time dealing with some of those rivalries in the Big 12 against the Oklahoma Sooners and maybe, you know, some of those battles with the Texas Longhorns and seeing all those battles down south in Kansas. And, you know, hey, listen, you know, Johnny Football's up here in Texas A&M, a bit of a different a bit of a different animal. Are you rooting for a guy like that, or what's your thoughts of seeing Manziel up here in the Canadian?
I'm not a hater by no means. I love the game. I love the business. You know what I'm saying? I wish him all the success. Like I say, I'm rooting for our league. I'm rooting for the CFL. So, you know what I mean? I'm just excited to see, you know, guys of that caliber to come up this way, because this is a league where I grew as a man, and this is where I spent my professional career. So this is it to me, D. You know what I mean? So anybody that can come up here on that scale, and, you know, I found over the history, you probably can agree with me, D, most of the guys that come up this way, you know, no matter how the career go while they're here, after they leave, you end up getting a little bit more humble of the process of being a pro. You know what I mean? That's what I find the CFL show you at time. You know, you really got to grind up here, you know? So, I'm excited about guys like that coming.
Chezzy, that's a businessman answer
no
right there. That's a businessman answer.
That is a businessman answer. You have definitely made a great career here. You've made Canada home, like you just said. You play for the Bombers. That's where you're at. That's where your heart's at right now. But you're going right back to Edmonton, where your life is now after the season's over. You've been you've been a great ambassador for the league for a long time, and more importantly, you still got a lot of juice left in those legs. So we look forward to seeing you. Have a year, buddy. Have a great
man, thank
year.
Thank you so much, brother. Thank y'all so much for having me, man. So grateful for it, and continue to keep me in the loop, man. Like I say, this is our league, and anytime I can help you guys to make our league better, I'm in, man.
Well, we appreciate that.
And, love it, people.
Adarius for Autism is the website you can check out. And listen, one of the great personalities in the Canadian Football League, and a guy who sure sounds like he's got a lot of gas left in the tank and already showed Edmonton after week one of the preseason. There sure is. Adarius Bowman from the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Get used to saying that this year, people, joining us this week on the Wagon.
Bring it back. Thank y'all.